Hello and welcome to the Clinical Oncology Podcast. My name is Saif Ahmed, and in this episode, we will be speaking with Professor Ricky Sharma and Dr. Melvin Chua. Professor Sharma is the Chair of Radiation Oncology at UCL London and Vice President of Medical Affairs at Varian. Alongside Professor Don Jones, he was the guest editor of our latest special issue entitled Clinical Applications of Novel Radiobiology. Dr. Chua is a radiation oncologist and clinician scientist at the National Cancer Centre, Singapore, and he has authored one of the articles in this special issue on proton beam therapy in the context of radiation resistance. In fact, the issue is littered with fantastic articles which cover immunotherapy combined with radiotherapy, model selection for drug-RT combinations, hypoxia, flash, microbeam, radionuclides. And there's also an article on how radiation therapy could be applied to arrhythmia management. So we really hope you enjoy the articles as well as this interview. So Melvin and Ricky, thank you so much for joining us today and to discuss the fantastic special issue around novel radiation biology. Ricky, I just wanted to ask you first of all about the special issue and why it was felt that now was a good time to release something on this area.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. It's actually been more than 15 years since there were a couple of very high-profile reports on both sides of the Atlantic stating that radiobiology was reaching a really critical point where there was a concern that we would not be able to maintain critical mass and that radiobiology could cease to exist as an academic specialty. And actually, those two high-profile reports resulted in a certain renaissance of funding into radiobiology by research councils, charities, professional societies, and general biomedical research funding groups. And I'm pleased to say that 15 to more than 15 years down the line, we've now turned the corner, and it's a really exciting time for radiobiology. And I think the journal Clinical Oncology has really played a part in shaping that, because every few years it's come out with a special issue on radiobiology. And this year, they were keen to feature some of the newer technologies that we don't often think about in terms of radiobiology, so non-cancer diseases as well as cancer diseases. And of course, the combination with immunotherapy. Should we be rethinking the way we do radiotherapy? And without really robust radiobiology, we can't really rethink the way we do radiotherapy with immunotherapy. And one final component of that in terms of the rethinking is actually how we fractionate. So there are new technologies coming through, such as flash, microbeam, proton therapy, which Melvin's going to discuss, radionuclide therapy, and how to dose and fractionate for that. So there's actually a lot coming through in this next decade in terms of clinical translation, and it's a really good time to be rethinking the way we do radiobiology.
Thank you so much for that, Ricky. And we'll talk to Melvin in a little while about his article and his views on the whole space, really. But again, sticking with yourself then, with the special issue, would you say there are any highlights that you wanted to share? There really are some fantastic articles across the board.
Yeah, it's all great, as you say, but I think there are a few highlights, a few themes that come across. We're thinking a lot about personalization of therapy. And radiotherapy is already personalized because anatomically and clinically it's personalized to those features on the scan and the features of the cancer in terms of histology. But we're entering a new era now. We're already seeing it in medical oncology, where we're thinking about genomic profiles and personalizing the drug treatment based on the genomic profiles. And increasingly over the next few years, we'll be seeing that for radiotherapy. So personalizing the radiotherapy, not just based on genomic profiles and liquid biopsy, but also based on imaging, because, you know, our specialty is twinned with imaging. And so, for example, radiomic profiles to predict which patients will do well with the standard dose and which patients need more dose nor to overcome resistance. So I think personalization is a big theme in this special issue, and a lot of the articles touch on how we might be personalizing radiotherapy in the future. And then the other big theme, I think, is changing the way we deliver radiotherapy. So not just the treatment planning, but also the fractionation, the dose, and the timing of the radiotherapy. So traditionally, we've just done radiotherapy every day, Monday to Friday, or we've hypofractionated and done, for example, Monday, Wednesday, Friday over a couple of weeks. But if you think about some of the new innovations, particularly the combination with immunotherapy, that might not be optimal for those treatments. So, you know, maybe we should separate the fractions more in time, maybe by weeks or months. Maybe we should be altering the fractions depending on the relative immunological effectiveness that we predict from a ratio. And there's a really nice article on that. So this is a really good time to be rethinking the way that we plan the radiotherapy, deliver the radiotherapy in the context of the other therapies that the patients are receiving.
Thank you. That's really clear and all really exciting stuff. So Melvin, I just wanted to bring you in at this point. So you've done a fantastic article around proton beam therapy in the context of novel radiation biology and how that can potentially be applied to address radiation resistance. Can you tell us a little bit more about that article and where your thoughts really lie with why that's a really important area?
Thanks, Saif, and thanks to Ricky, of course, for inviting me to sort of contribute. I think before I even sort of attempt to give an answer, the whole issue that Ricky sort of and Don Jones put together, it's crucial because, you know, as he mentioned, we're at a critical juncture of radiation biology right now, where, you know, with all the new technology and the new science that's coming through from genomics on precision oncology, it almost feels like radiation biology is at an inflection point where if we are able to elevate the quality of the science. And so, you know, that was really the motivation for behind the review article that we sort of put together. Because as I was thinking about it, I mean, we could talk about being more precise to deliver proton beams. You know, we can talk about RBE and the conventional sort of mechanisms underpinning radiation cell killing. But I thought that there were a few novel themes within proton beam that needed just a bit more push. And I thought, you know, this article could help to emphasize the novelty and galvanize the field to look at this and think about the concepts hard, about how we're going to interrogate them in the laboratory and then translate them to the clinic. So it was just, you know, an opportune moment that we were running a translational program on proton beam therapy. And this program has been going on since 2016. And at the time, you know, FLASH was just gathering a lot of momentum. So we too jumped on the bandwagon. But at the same time, the main motivation was about beyond just precision delivery, but understanding precision biology. You know, how do we integrate genomics to understand radio resistance? How do we move beyond DNA repair? Those were the motivations of some of the questions you wanted to interrogate on, you know, in my laboratory. And then you see some of those concepts being shared in the review paper. And really, the FLASH therapy was just something that I thought would be novel and sexy enough and captivating enough to then bring in a layer into some of the work that my laboratory is doing. And then really sort of, you know, bring the two concepts together and allow them to converge in this review paper. So that was, you know, what how I conceptualized the title, and hopefully the responses have been promising so far.
That's fantastic. And what would you say would be one of the key take homes then from that article?
I think a number of things. I think clearly with genomics, we have understood a lot more about intrinsic radio resistance as well as the interplay between the microenvironment. We spend quite a bit of time in espousing on some of the new concepts, not just, you know, work by us, but also work by several other sort of, you know, very established groups. So that was the key part. But we also spent a bit of time just also elaborating about the current clinical trials that are ongoing in proton beam therapy. And you know, this is where perhaps I might appeal for your tolerance and for me to be a bit more provocative. I think with proton beam therapy, the conventional trials with design, one would even say that they were somewhat set up to fail because, you know, we focus too much on dose escalation, we focus too much on normal tissue toxicity sparing. But the reality was what we were doing in the clinic, you, myself, Ricky, would attest to, is we're already doing a pretty good job at minimizing toxicity to our patients. Of course, there are still room for improvement, but will we be able to see those bigger gains being realized in the setting of a clinical trial? You know, it's a big question. So I think here, really kudos to some of the work that Ricky is leading with Varian and Siemens, you know, in terms of pushing the FLASH-RT clinical program. I thought it is important for us to then merge the two together, recognize where we have failed in terms of the clinical trial design with Proton, bring in FLASH-RT, and then really push the boundaries as to how can we actually design or think about new trials for to actually, you know, investigate FLASH-RT sensibly and yet do it in a very scientifically robust way where we can actually learn from it, learn what we fail, learn what we succeed. And perhaps through innovative trial design, we can then really test the limits of the radiation, how creative we can be in terms of delivering radiotherapy. And so I thought really three things brought together, the failings of the conventional proton clinical trial design, two, you know, some of the what we already know and we're beginning to realize even more in terms of bringing in precision techniques to understand mechanisms of tumor radio resistance, and then finally the novel part about FLASH-RT and how all three could actually help us think of novel ways to translate.
I'd just like to endorse and augment what Melvin just said, and thanks for the positive feedback on the progress we're making. Traditionally, well, in the last couple of decades, there's a well-established role for proton therapy for, you know, pediatric cancers and certain cancers in adults. And, you know, the standard list in most countries is pretty much the same in terms of those indications where protons are clearly better than photons. And I think there's a lot of progress to be made to augment that list and to reduce some of the difficult areas with protons. So range uncertainty, for example, we're making a lot of progress on that. Dose escalation, because we get less normal tissue toxicity. And building on what Melvin said about trials, clinical trials, we're now seeing a new era of proton therapy clinical trials. An example of that is the PROTECT trial, which is across the whole of Europe. It's vendor neutral. It's really pushing the boundaries for esophageal cancer using a trimodality treatment approach strategy, and it's led by Kai Grau from Aarhus. Those sorts of trials are going to make a massive difference to the field of proton therapy because they will show, you know, for example, less morbidity, maybe even less mortality compared to standard therapy, and they will set a new standard. And the other consortium, if you like, is in FLASH. So we have something called the FLASH Forward Consortium, which brings together 25 centers across the world to work not just on translation of proton FLASH, but also the clinical trials in the space of proton FLASH. So I think the new era is not just single centers working on proton therapy and treating the standard indications. The new era is this collaborative approach across proton therapy centers to find those new indications and improve treatment for patients with cancer.
Thank you for that both. So just going back to a couple of points raised, really, really provocative, and it'll be great obviously to link that in with the articles too. But Melvin, you said that some of these proton beam studies have been designed to fail in the past. So just trying to pick that apart a little bit. So were you saying that just the focus more around quite modest dose escalations or really just focusing around normal tissue tox, those areas we were never really going to see a strong efficacy signal? Or what would you say specifically was wrong? And then what specifically can be done to improve those?
It would be hard to just sort of put a generic comment on all the trials, but you know, just a few come to mind, right? I mean, for example, like the lung trial. If I recall, I mean, I'm not a thoracic oncologist myself, but I do recall there were two trials from the MD Anderson group, and one was certainly, and a trial that I would like to sort of raise to your attention is the trial that actually utilized a Bayesian design. And that was one that had a toxicity as a primary endpoint. And the trial essentially was a negative study. But of course, there were still a lot of good learning points. But that, as well as other trials showing the futility of dose escalation, clearly highlights a critical point that if radiotherapy trials, or if the radiotherapy community at large is to move beyond and is to push the next frontiers of cancer care, then we have to think beyond dose. We have to think beyond what dose is as an absolute measure. We have to think deeper into the biology. Now, and that's why, I took such a huge interest in radio resistance, because I'm a believer that radio resistance, yes, a part of it may be due to inadequate dosimetry, but those are certainly in the earlier era where radiotherapy delivery may not be as good. But with the modern techniques that we have today, we have to exploit novel biology. It is probably 70% of the radio resistance is driven by bad biology. We see that in very radiosensitive tumors that we treat as well. So that's been one of the main motivations for a lot of the work that we do and what I firmly believe in. So which then brings to mind, I think if we are to design new trials, I think we need to understand new biology. Flash is just one way where we could find something novel with proton, but in this instance, it is understanding the symbiosis between proton and flash and whether there's anything novel within there. But for just non-flash proton RT, there could be other new biology that we have not uncovered. And I think going in that direction is important, because if we then can then find new mechanisms that we don't exploit or we don't see in photons, then that would be far more appealing in terms of designing a trial for that. You enrich for bad and unfavorable subgroup of patients, and you look at novel drug plus proton beam RT as your phase two or your early phase trials.
Thanks, Melvin. And Ricky, a lot of things have already come up that I think are really striking. But in particular, your point around sort of changing almost the landscape of how we do these studies and trying to work collaboratively. So clearly, there's a lot of, one can imagine there's a lot of benefits with that. You can also imagine there are probably some barriers and challenges. So is that something that you've seen, and how can those be overcome?
Yeah, it's a great question. There are barriers. I think the barriers change with time. So, for example, with greater digitalization of everything we do in medicine, which was accelerated by COVID and the pandemic, for example, sharing images across countries or sharing data sets across countries, that has become the new challenge because we do need to do that in order to work collaboratively. But we are making significant progress there. A lot of it is cloud-based, making progress on anonymization and GDPR. I think if we anticipate what those boundaries are going to be in this new world, the new world of precision therapy, the new world of digitalization and AI, then we can start to work around them and plan for those barriers. And I think we're doing a reasonable job at that with the trials, certainly that we're planning from Varian. We do have that central collection, that central planning, and it hasn't delayed our progress in terms of Varian-sponsored clinical trials. So I think it can be done, but we do need to work with our partners and stakeholders in order to anticipate those barriers.
Thank you for that. And Melvin, sort of from your end, sort of as a clinical academic, have you found any challenges trying to get involved with these kind of international initiatives?
I think initially there was obviously a lot of barriers trying to establish a framework where, you know, you fulfill all the legal requirements and to get things operational, it took a bit of time. But I think everyone is driven by a common goal, right? Which is to improve cancer care, to keep pushing the boundaries. And I think for the majority, if not all, clinical academics is that, you know, we are driven by that. We are driven by this very purist intention. So people will somehow make things work. And I think that's what we are seeing. And so to that point, we have been able to collaborate with imaging, with data sets, clinical data sets, genomic data sets. And I think we are at an exciting era now because I believe most of the groups have got around the kinks. And I echo what Ricky said at the beginning. You know, I think I speak for someone who operate out of a very small country like Singapore, right? If we were to do, you know, we leverage on our ability to be efficient. So we focus a lot of our efforts on early phase trials. But when it comes to actually changing the standard of care, we still need to defer to the large phase three trials. And that's where on our own, we wouldn't be able to run a study like that. And therefore, it is important for us to be plugged into this international networks. And we have been quite successful in terms of leveraging on our ability to network, you know, like collaborating within the ASEAN region, as well as with China, like in head and neck cancers, MPC, where it's very common in this part of the world and much less so in the West. So I think perhaps just as one of a few final comments is, I know I've sort of spent the bulk of the podcast pushing out or sharing some negative comments, but I think where we are now, the field is much better place, and there's a lot of optimism for radiation oncology to actually do things differently and push the needle.
Thank you very much. And sort of coming towards the end of the discussion, I wanted to focus on one area that's both in the special issue and it's been touched on already today around immunotherapy. So there's a lot of excitement and interest around combining that with radiation. It'd be great to hear your general thoughts around this. But one area that's, you know, also been come up is around sequencing, how you have to adapt the immunotherapy around the radiation treatment. Do you give it pre, during, post? And Ricky, you mentioned something quite provocative around actually, do we just need to adapt the radiation around the immunotherapy? So can you share a little bit around your sort of contemporary thoughts around that? And also, I'd propose that, like, do you think we're ever going to get there? Because it just seems like almost such a knotty question to answer with so many different variables. Do you think we'll ever be in a position where we'll be able to find the right sequencing of these treatments for the right patients that can be sort of clinically of value?
Yeah, there's a lot of parts to that question. And let me start with a ton of optimism. So yes, I think we will get there. In responding to the final part, and the reason I think that is that we know that there is a synergy between radiotherapy, particularly hypofractionated radiotherapy, and immunotherapy, and we also know that immunotherapy is the new standard for so many cancers. And around half the drugs, the anti-cancer drugs that were approved by the FDA, were immune-related drugs last year. So there's no doubt that immunotherapy will become the standard for more and more cancers. And we're already seeing that, certainly for the cancers that I treat in the clinic and across the board, you know, moving from melanoma across to other cancers. So the other thing is that we're seeing is that, you know, we're getting improving survival rates for cancers, you know, like prostate cancer and breast cancer. A lot of these cancers are no longer fatal diseases, they're chronic diseases. And it's about living with the cancer and living with the therapies. And so radiotherapy can fit into that much better than it it has done so far. I think we've been very good at using radiotherapy for radical treatment as an alternative to surgery for curing certain cancers, but maybe less good at incorporating radiotherapy into a chronic disease lifestyle, where perhaps we need to space out our therapies in combination with immunotherapy. You know, perhaps we need to think about different ways of fractionating, maybe different modalities. You know, we've got protons that Melvin's talked about. We've got flash. We've got microbeam coming through in the future. So different modalities depending on what is optimal for that particular cancer. And I think in order to answer those questions, we do need those critical experiments in preclinical models. Luckily, the immunocompetent mouse models do predict pretty well what happens in the clinic. And we saw that for the melanoma models. So as long as we have good enough models, and the models are improving all the time, not just immunocompetent mouse models, but also human histoculture models and organotypic culture. So we should be able to answer a lot of those questions in the preclinical models, translate them rapidly into trials using novel trial design, as Melvin mentioned, and then show in the clinic that we don't need to interfere too much with the systemic therapy. We can augment the systemic therapy. And sometimes when resistance is developing to systemic therapy, we can actually turn that around with radiotherapy. So that's why I'm optimistic.
Thank you. And Melvin, any thoughts on that?
Not much to add to what Ricky said. I think he touched on most of the points. But I'll just sort of share a very nice story. And I think we already see the synergy between immunotherapy and radiotherapy in the clinic. Of course, we're still waiting for trials to read out because, you know, ultimately we should not dismiss trials because they define standards of care. But for example, like in anaplastic thyroid cancer, where this is a lethal disease, patients don't typically live beyond, you know, 5 to 6 months. But we've seen very impressive signals of patients treated with immunotherapy and radiotherapy in my clinic. And whereby we actually have, you know, long-term survivors for this lethal disease with lifespan of extending beyond a year to 2 years. So I think such impressive results already imply that there is impact in the clinic, you know, regardless of whether trials read out or not. I think what we do have to be clever is how are we going to be creative in terms of doing these studies? You know, should we adhere to the conventional head-to-head comparison, or are there ways where we can actually assign or design trials that fit for these rare cancers? Again, leveraging on the networks that industry have built, that cooperative groups have built, and at the same time, learn from these clinical signals by layering in biospecimen collection, biomarker discovery work, so that we really build this rich resource. And I think, you know, it just basically requires a multi-pronged approach as opposed to a one-size-fits-all. So I think that's where I see immunotherapy and radiotherapy panning out in the next few years.
Thank you, Melvin and Ricky. A really optimistic note to end things on. I really wanted to thank you both for your time today and for your contributions in this fantastic special issue.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Thank you so much.